on. This is Short Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf from the Warhammer 40k and Age of Sigmar worlds. Don't miss the live show on Thursdays. But for now, you got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-host, Steve. What do you hear? What do you say, bud?
Hey, we're going to talk about Holy Havoc, and we're going to talk about OTR Bone Reapers.
That's right, man. That's right. I think it was back when Nova broke. We were actually the first show that kind of broke the whole OTR Bone Reapers, you know, tie the bones kind of stuff, man. I guess I should say not broke it because there was a bunch of leaks, but Grimdark Live kind of brought it to everyone first. When the announcement was made, we had people there and we heard about it and we rolled with it. So kind of proud on that. I don't know if it puts a feather in our cap, but I hope it does. But we are going to be talking about that. We got some good stuff in the news. We're going to be talking a little bit about some stuff from the Mind of Mangle. We got some Mortark Guard stuff that he put back out again, and that guy always puts out some good stuff. We also have some Warhammer Underworlds. They're kind of rolling out their Grand Master stuff that they want to, you know, get everybody involved with. And I love the fact that they're harkening back to Games Day. Remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so they'll probably be coming out with Games Day again someday. I think that's in the near future.
I really hope so. I really, really do. I think it's needed. And I think we're heading in that direction. And we got a great, great guest with us today. We've got Steve Herner with us here to talk to us a little bit about Holy Havoc 2019, and we're going to get into some Holy Wars that's coming up in February. Herner, thank you very, very much for being on this little Pee-wee show, man. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
It's great to have you here. I know that this is a lot to ask of you from just coming from one heck of an event, and you probably wanted time to cool your heels, and then you had me begging and pleading and crying for you to come on the show here for a little while. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hobby never stops here.
No, it doesn't. And just before we keep the wheels rolling here, how many days in a row? Now, this is what I find amazing. I'm going to say this kind of back up. I'm going to interrupt myself and interrupt you all at the same time. So for anyone listening right now, this is Steve Herner. This guy put in over 300 days building tables. He's got his Dr. Doom Stormcast. He's got all these things that we're going to hear about on today's show. And the guy is really just an amazing person. And so how many days, as we sit here right now, how many days are we in right now?
Today makes 330.
You're an animal.
In a row.
You know, eating and sleeping is kind of a popular thing. I'm just as a suggestion.
Well, I get my – I eat and I sleep, and I eat at the desk. I'll sleep at the desk, you know. And I have fallen asleep with a paintbrush in my hand before. That has happened.
Yeah, I'm picturing that happening. And yeah, and we've got a – We got one of the Grimdark goons kind of here joining us today. We got Dustin. Dustin, thank you very much for being with us, man. You're going to talk a little bit about the Osiarch Bone Reapers and kind of talk about your conversion from Daughters of Cain to Osiarchs, right?
Yep. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Good deal. Thanks. Well, thank you for joining us. And Herner, just let you know, Dustin's one of our club guys, and I know that one of these days, and he's a hell of a player. So one of these days, when we get the Holy Hammers together with the Grimdark Goons, we want to try to get some games in for sure in the near future.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure you guys will come out on top if it's a club challenge. Because we're more hobbyists than players.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. You've never seen me play. It's pretty pathetic. I may give you a win just so you don't talk bad about me.
Okay, I'll take it. A win's a win.
There you go, man. And always, folks, we got the question of the day and the closing thought towards the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark Goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grim Dark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
One of our guests, our main guest that's joining us tonight, is, as I said, kind of the top of the show, is a great, great person, a real key figure in the community, a tremendous credit to this game, and a guy that really needs no introduction, and that's Steve Herner. Herner, again, one more time, thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're getting bored of that. All right, enough. And I get it, man. I get it. I'm just the biggest kiss ass you ever met in your life. So
no, I'm not bored. Just saying I'm not bored. Not at all.
That's it. So you are literally the man that puts the tables into tabletop warfare. I mean, you. Well, I got to tell you, I just came from Holy Havoc 2019. Steve, the co-host here, also. You know what? If it's okay, I got to refer to one as Herner, the other as Steve. Cool? Does that
That's
work?
That's fine. All right. It works.
You know, as a veteran Herner, you're probably used to that. We live by our last name for a long time.
That's right. I'm not offended.
There you go. So, so Steve, we just came from Holy Havoc 2019.
Oh, my favorite table, I have to tell Herner. My favorite table was the Venetian Stormcast table. Can I just thank the rivers for killing like more things than my Hearthguard Berserkers were able to do?
You're very welcome. Yeah.
You have my eternal thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. In fact, I just did the pour, Steve and Pat. So that table, interesting enough, wasn't actually 100% complete. So tonight
we're just fine.
I just did the pour for the resin, and I'll be posting a picture of that on Twitter for the Canals of Radiance. So I'll be posting that on my Twitter feed. Actually, I could do it while we're on the show. That'd be kind of fun.
I got to tell you, let me explain what a loser I am. His unfinished work. If I were to do anything like that, I'd have to get an Ouija board, and I'd have to like call up like Picasso or something like that just to get half of that. You don't have to come on the show and brag all the time, Herner.
No, I guess not, but, you know, it's who I am, right?
I'll tell you what, dude, good stuff. But yeah. So I got to ask you, I mean, you put an these tables are legendary. It's what everybody, I don't want to say what Holy Havoc or Holy Wars is known for, but I'm going to say it's one of the big things that they're known for. I mean, it's such an original concept, original idea, this narrative event. And I know that we're going to get into this here a little bit into the show here in a few minutes, but folks, I got to tell you, if you've been to Holy Havoc, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't been to Holy Havoc, get yourself in gear and get there. It is probably the singular most amazing event I've ever gone to, and I got to tell you, I've paid 4 years in a row, and I finally made it.
and you, so
I was like a silent partner in the background for a little.
Yeah,
while.
You were our. Oh God, what's that term? Not broker, not
beneficiary.
Beneficiary. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
There you go. And but I want to say before we kind of get rolling, Herner, the event was unbelievable, more than I expected.
Thanks.
And you really knocked it out of the park. And I don't know how you do it. And I think if you ever told me how you did it, you'd probably scare the hell out of me. So I'll just leave it.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Cool. Leave it there. That works for me.
But So you got to be recovering a little bit from a very successful Holy Havoc 2019. I mean,
yeah, it was great. I mean, it was, you know, as I think I said this the last time when I was on your show, you know, the original Holy War, Holy Events really were because I wanted to hang out with the Lords of War, our sister club up in Minnesota, at an event called Wapaka. And Wapaka, they didn't get in that year. And so I just reached out to those guys and I said, hey guys, if I were to put on a tournament, would you guys come down? And they said, yes. So then it just kind of snowballed from there. But so that was like the first reason for doing the event. But the main reason we do the event is to try to raise some money for a local homeless shelter called Hesed House, which I'm close to because of working in youth ministry at our parish. And so over the 9 events that we've done over the last 5 years, we've been able to raise a significant amount of money, and the generosity of spirit of players in the room this weekend was just unreal. And that pushed us close to $10,000 over 5 years and nine tournaments. You know, we donate this money as soon as we get it. In fact, I was talking to the director over there at Hesed House today, because this year we're doing something a little different. We're going to try to get a family out of the shelter and into an apartment. And so we're going to take this money, and they kind of use it like a scholarship. And basically we're going to give them this money. Belle and I, my wife, she's going to go over there with me, and we're going to try and help somebody directly. Normally what we do is we take that money and we put it into the St. John's Episcopal Church Hesed House Food Fund. And we cook meals for the homeless using that money. It's the way we're able to, it's the only way that ministry is actually funded. It doesn't get any other funding other than what we do now. It used to get funded by senior citizens that would go to the local mall, like Fox Valley Mall, and try and sell coupon books to fund the meals. Well, now, you know, I was like, well, you know, let's use this event to do that. And it's just kind of grown from there. And that's the main driving force behind why I do it now. And I guess from a selfish perspective, Pat and Steve, it's a great outlet for me to try to get those ideas I have in my head. And, you know, most of these ideas, actually every table were concepts I always had up there in my head that I wanted to try to build. And it gives me a good excuse to get all that out. So. Well, it's been advantageous for everybody.
I got to tell you, it worked, and you knocked it out of the park. So I mean, to kind of rewind here a little bit on what you said, there are nine events. Now, it's been five of the Holy Wars and four of the Holy Havoc. Am I correct? I mean, this is your fourth year of Holy Havoc, the team tournament.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's right.
And you said it was, and I'm sorry if I misunderstood you. It was Hepit, H-E-P-P, or is it Hefet, H-E-F?
No, Hesed, H-E-S-E-D. It's a homeless shelter in Aurora.
Gotcha. Okay, I misunderstood you. And I think, you know, and I know that if you've ever listened to our little show here before in the past, we've always talked about, you know, what reason do you have as a gamer to you know, grab all your models after all the time you've spent, the money you've spent on the models, the paints, and the time you've spent painting them and basing them, and all the effort you put into your models, the cases, the foam, everything that goes with it. When you go out and play these tournaments, you know, we always pose the question here on the show, what kind of tournaments, I mean, why would you go and pay money to play in a tournament, to play a game that you can normally play for free? And right. I mean, after, of course, all the tremendous expense, you know, to gain entry into the game. And, you know, I've always found tournaments like yourself, you know, that are a charitable tournament. You know, I mean, not to you know, toot my horn, but in many ways, I tried to build my own tournament after what you've done. And, sure. You know, and that's, you know, that's awesome. With Armed Forces Day, we give 100% of the proceeds to our active duty troops. And, you know, hopefully I could ever be half as successful as you are with what you've done. I mean, you really are an example to all of us that are not only tournament organizers, but event organizers, on really that model person in the community to be. And I admire the heck out of you just for that.
Oh, well, yeah, thanks. Thanks. It's humbling to hear.
It's the truth. It really is. So, but I want to talk to you about something else that's kind of humbling that I want to kind of key on. So my co-host here, Steve, you know, you kind of heard him talking in the background a little bit. Steve, I want to ask you this. I'm going to ask you this in front of Herner here. What was your overall game record the entire event weekend?
You talking points or wins? I mean, what do you mean?
Wins and losses. Yeah. Yeah.
Four wins, one loss.
Four and one.
Wow, that's pretty good for my event.
You know, Herner, I'd like to request something here. I'd like there to be some kind of an investigation, because there's no way Steve did that well legally. Now,
What were you playing, Steve? What were you playing? What was your army?
Fire Slayers.
Oh, wow.
Now, before you start taking his side, you know, let me kind of say this. You know, can we set something up? I can even help put that together, even lead the investigation if you want to.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of your co-host beating the pants off you.
you see, Steve, what
you're just mad you didn't win with Knoblers.
I gotta, yeah, you know what?
We just let Pat talk, and then we hope that he wears himself out eventually.
That's not possible, Steve.
we've learned this over the years.
Not possible.
I don't mind a little bit of abuse, but this is really kind of getting to an unusual level here, guys. You know, can we just keep going?
Well,
you were the one who invited me, dude.
I already got the hell beat out of me at Holy Havoc. No, actually, you know, in all seriousness, Evan and I went 0-1-4.
And, that's good, though. That's actually good.
But I got to tell you, you know,
that's what it's meant to do. So, I mean, it's your first event, too. Steve's been to one of our events before.
Yeah, that's true.
So Steve knew what he was in store for. Steve knew how. You know, that's the big thing, right? I mean, I think Steve would say that he was better prepared this time around.
Oh, absolutely.
So he knew what was coming, and he probably told you, and you and Evan probably were just kind of like, oh, yeah, right. Come on. And, you know, because a lot of people, they don't expect it. They really don't. And it's for some players, you know, like Brendan Melnick, his first year, he was just like, holy crap. And a lot of players, they don't expect it, because this is the tournament where the tables get to play and the tables will play. And if you don't play the table and you don't play the terrain in the proper manner, it could bite you. And
hey, I love the way the tables were playing this weekend.
I bet you did. Sounds like you did. You certainly did. But hey, that's credit to you, Steve, because you knew what was possible. And if you deployed the right way and you took a look at what was there and you took advantage of your spacing and your objectives, you could do well. So now you'll know, Pat, when you and Evan come back,
We are definitely going to come back, even if we have to break in or something. That we're definitely coming back.
You know what's so funny about that tournament is that we had so many, like, of our own names for the tables. Like, for instance, the floating island table we were calling Bespin.
Yeah, right. Of course.
We called the Sigbright Temple the Venetian. Venetian Sigbright City.
Yeah.
We had all of our own names for the tables.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I a few years, just to segue. That's a good segue, because like when I originally conceived of Holy Wars, it was centered around, you know, Warhammer Fantasy, right? So
the old Rank and Flank days.
Right. So imagine playing the games on those tables with Rank and Flank. It was
a big balancing act, almost, probably.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was. I mean, there was a lot of cursing out there of my name over the weekend, but. My point is that, like, the names of the tables were all stuff that everybody knew, right? I mean, you had 30 years of Warhammer, right? So people knew all these different things. They knew the Shrine of the Phoenix. They knew what these different things were, the Oak of the Ages. They knew all this kind of stuff. And then when, you know, Age of Sigmar obviously dropped, I started to think to myself, okay, I gotta start drilling in on the narrative for Age of Sigmar. So I started to change the names of tables. And I still, I mean, the Shifting Monolith table, for example, the Shifting Monolith table is a carryover from the world that was, right? There was this shifting monolith that, if you were to look in the old rule book, there was this shifting monolith of chaos. And so, and the concept behind that model on that table is that you'll notice that Nurgle was ascendant, you know, and in the end days, the end times, that's why that monolith is on top, right? Because it was during the end times when I built that, when Nurgle was doing what it did.
That's a great table.
And so, you know, so we still have kind of these remnant and these holdovers, and I even get confused by the names. So I think it's pretty awesome that you guys came up with your own names so you could keep track of what's going on, because I even sometimes get confused with it. You would think I would know them all, but I even get confused sometimes.
Well,
speaking of which, what is the actual name of the floating island table?
The Realm of Haish. Actually, you know what, Steve? I'm going to say that's the wrong name, you know? That's a good question, dude.
You know, Herner, we completely understand, man. You got to absolutely be exhausted. You've been working for like 300 days straight. I mean,
right. Well, yeah. I wasn't working on the tables. No, let's be fair. Let's be honest. It wasn't all just for the tables. I would say probably, you know, I try to mix it up and get a break in here and there, but I would say that it was around the summertime. So I was dedicated on table construction. I had two new tables for this event, and those two new tables were the Brass Fortress and then the Ruined Temple City of Sigmar table. Now, you asked me about what the name was for. Yeah, it was the Fight for Haish is what it is. That's the Bespin table, the Fight for Haish. So that's my version of what maybe the realm, you know, the realm of the gods looks like, right?
Loved it.
No, Haish is the realm of light.
I played on that table twice.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that table.
I played on that table once. It was a great table. You know what I loved about it? We'll get into really what kind of the Holy Havoc experience was here very in about just a few minutes. But for anyone just joining us, what we're talking about right now is Holy Havoc 4, I guess the best way to put it, was a 30-team, 60-player event. And the tournament had 5 games of Age of Sigmar battling on all of Herner's legendary tables and terrain. And I got to tell you, from a guy that's only heard about the tables and seen them in pictures for about 3 years prior to actually being at the event, the pictures and the conversation you have with people that have been there don't do them justice. Now, they really do, but those tables are breathtaking. They're amazing, the effort that was put into them. And something I want to go back to that we kind of touched on in the beginning when we started first kind of, describing our experiences at Holy Havoc 4 was the word narrative. That what I love about that is it's a narrative. It's one of the best narrative, I guess, tournaments, events I've ever been to, because I felt like I was literally going through the realm gates to different worlds in the Age of Sigmar world. But it's not it's narrative, but somehow Herner has found a way to combine the essence of true competitiveness with surprises, because the tables attack you.
Oh yeah.
And there was a game. It was our second game, and I think we were playing against, or no, it was the third game. I think we were playing against Lich King's Wrath, I believe was the team. And the we were like fighting them and the table.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. It was, but it was just a great time. And you know, as I said before, folks, the legendary part of the tables is really just how awesome they look, but they actually fight the armies on them. If you can try to imagine that, the way that the Herner has designed them all, and it really is like having a third opponent on every table. But we're definitely going to get back to Holy Havoc here. Let me get some of the news out of the way, if we can go ahead and do that, and then we're going to keep the show rolling. So we do have some news, not a lot of news to really get into right now, but some stuff to kind of get your mind around. We got in Warhammer community, we got the Mind of Mangle. We got the Mortec Guard 2 that have come out, and you're going to get to see some changes in kind of what Tyler Mangle has been doing as far as his painting tutorials. He's got a step-by-step painting tutorial on how he painted some of the Mortec Guard, and it was part 2 where he previously had shown some of his painting of some of his Osiarch Bone Reapers to match his Death Army. And it's really kind of a neat, I preferred to kind of talk about this a little bit in the news, because he didn't, now Tyler, if you guys know who he is, he's a fantastic artist, but sometimes he takes things way above, you know, us common folk, me really, cause I paint like a blind drunk, one arm drunk that just fell off a tilt-a-whirl. I don't know the difference between a left or right-handed paintbrush, but this guy is pretty good. But, he really kind of kept it kind of down for us common folk to understand. So if you want to do that, get over and take a look at his step-by-step article on that one. And the other thing that was in the news that I thought was pretty, have you guys seen that one, Herner? I guess I should say that.
No, here. Okay. I don't know if I've seen it yet. Yeah. Not that one.
It's pretty good. You know, he kind of goes through some brief descriptions too, but Dustin, have you seen that one?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. It's pretty, again, it's, you know, miles above my painting, but you went through step by step and, explained it pretty well. So,
Yeah.
So, I would suggest anyone to go do that. I love stuff like that because I really need all the help I can get. But also in the news was Warhammer Underworlds. And what I really liked about this is I'm one of the old school gamers like Herner, like Steve. Dustin, I don't think you were quite there with all of us. I mean, we were there, Dustin, to give you an idea, when Herner and Steve and I all started playing this game, the rule book had only one page to it, and the front page just said, bang two rocks together. That was it. That was all the rule book was at that time.
Ah, okay.
But they're hearkening back to something that was called Games Day, and Herner, you got to remember Games Day. I mean, it was
sure.
I remember Games Day.
Do you really? Amount.
Okay.
I've never actually gone to a games day.
Yeah.
But yeah, back like when I first started Warhammer, which is third edition 40K.
Okay.
Yeah, they still advertise game days in the White Dwarf and whatnot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're back to using the phrase Grandmaster again, Grandmaster Championship, which was always part of games day, which I'm really kind of course they're tying it into Warhammer Underworlds, but it was kind of a, kind of an article on how to become a grandmaster. And, you know, 3 years ago, when I guess the game-changing game of Warhammer Underworlds was first released, it really became a hit. It took off. And it almost, there was a while there that we talked about it here on the show that we thought it was going to overtake the tabletop game. We weren't sure what we had here. And a lot of the you know, GW has seen what the old and new fans have done by as far as taking this game on, and they've expanded it. They've expanded it to be, I guess, a little more enticing and competitive. And so in 2020, what they're doing here is Games Workshop is going to be giving the world's best players a chance to compete for the ultimate glory in the Grandmasters Championship, which is going to be a global event that will see the very highest levels of competition. And you may, depending on the store, you may already somewhat be qualified. Now, the Grandmaster, is, as I said before, it is a global event. It's going to be held at the 2020 Nova Open between the 2nd and 6th of September of 2020. And every competitor will obviously be a seasoned Warhammer Underworlds champion in their prospective regions. That's going to be brought together from across the planet, really, for, you know, this massive event. So I'm picturing in my mind how big this is going to be. But there are three ways that are in the article that are going to allow people to win, or I guess compete, what levels you have to get to be a Grandmaster. Obviously, you're going to have to win a Grand Clash. That's going to be locally through your stores. You're going to have to win a Grandmaster's Championship, which, again, from what I understand, is going to be a conglomerate, almost like a composite posting of rankings through local stores. And then you're going to be randomly selected from the GW Store Championship winners pool. And the way that I understood this to be is it's going to be not only GW stores themselves, but certain independent stores are going to be participative in this as well. So it they're really kind of bringing back the old, you know, it kind of feels to me where they used to tie in the point systems, a lot of the older global campaigns like Albion, you know, the Nemesis Crown, you know, all these other global tournaments where, you know, they
Storm
were able
Chaos,
to
Storm of Chaos, Chaos, yeah, stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is what this feels like to me. So I'm really excited to see where this goes. I'm not a big Underworlds player per se. Herner, are do you, I mean, obviously I don't, you work so much for this hobby. Do you ever get a chance to play? Do you play Underworlds?
I did when it first came out, and then, the scale creep with the card collecting, it got too much. You know, you kind of had to make sure you stayed on top of all of it, and then I just, you know, I just ran out of gas with it. So
yeah.
I played it over the summer when I was on vacation. It's a great game to pack up and take with you if you want to just play it at the beach or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We had a house on the beach this summer, so we took it there and I played a few games and I remembered how much I loved it. But I only did season one. I didn't go any deeper just because of that, you know. And I'm looking to kind of, you know, I've got so many projects with so many armies that it's tough to continue jumping into other things, especially something like that, where it's like, for me, you know, as you're buying decks over and over and over again and reconstructing your deck, it just got to be, for me, a little bit too much work, I
sure.
guess.
No,
it's
I
almost
that.
Like almost like GW's answer to Magic the Gathering. It's like, hey,
yeah,
let's make,
extent.
I mean, with the deck building and, hey, you always have to keep buying more cards and stuff like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I got a little turned, I got to be honest with you, I got a little turned off with it when they decided not to, you know, I thought they were going to, like, print all the cards, right, so you didn't have to buy the models, like, print them separately.
That's right.
There was some talk of that, like, oh, the cards are going to be available, and I was kind of like what they did with Warcry, where you could pick up your faction cards. Mm-hmm. Without having to buy, you know, new models.
Brand new models, yeah.
Right. I mean, and look, I love buying models. We're not in this hobby because we hate models.
Sure.
Okay. But when you've got, you know, when you've got an avalanche of plastic crack getting ready to fall on your head, as I'm looking at mine, you know, you just say, when's enough. I mean, I did buy, you know, I bought, let's see, I think it ended at Skaven, right, for season one. What are there, three seasons now?
Yeah, we're up to the Beastmen, and that's what brought me in was the Beastie Boys, you know.
Yeah, I love those models. In fact, I owe Domus something for some of those models, and I love the models. Like the sculpts are off the hook, and the new models for Slaves of Darkness that are going to be in Underworlds, those look awesome too, and I'll definitely be picking those up for the Slaves of Darkness army. So, I mean, they're going to get me to buy models regardless, but as far as the whole Magic the Gathering thing, it just is a little too too much. And I did, to be honest with you too, I liked the game a lot more before the Magic got into it.
You know what?
I enjoyed season one a lot.
I had a friend of mine say the same thing to me not too long ago, because I was talking to him about, because he's played a lot of Underworlds, and he mm-hmm. he pretty much echoed the exact same sentiment. But at any rate, you know, that's what's happening right now. GW, I think, is putting their toe in the water to see if they ever want to bring. To me, this is a crack in the door. They're opening the door just a little bit to see if there's interest to maybe bring back Games Day, because that's something that's been rumored since Adepticon 17. As I seem to recall. So to kind of wrap this up, folks, there's a few things. You know, first, you know, if you've ever won a Grand Clash, you know, get in touch with the Grandmasters page on the Warhammer community page and let GW know to secure your place in the Grandmasters by, you know, obviously filling out the document there, what store number, where it was, all that kind of stuff. And the second method is to obviously win a Grandmasters championship. You know, you got to win these big things. And then the third one is you're going to have to secure a victory in a store championship that you could be eligible for a place at the Grand Masters. And I think the Grand Masters is only going to be at Nova. I don't know if they plan on doing it in other areas, but right now it looks like Nova is the selected tournament for the world for the Grand Masters Championship in September of 2020. So if you have any other questions, folks, you can head out and check out the Warhammer Underworlds website with all the latest information, plus some terms and conditions you might want to check out if you're thinking about entering. So good luck to everyone. I definitely won't be there. I don't think Herner will be. Dustin, no. You know, Steve, are you jumping into that one? Are you going to be a Grandmaster?
No.
You know, no, fantasy is enough for me. I don't need any other plastic crack addiction.
But Steve, I do want to warn you though. I'm still going to talk to Herner about this investigation. You know, we still got to look into this a little bit.
We're investigating how you even got in the front door.
You know, Herner, we don't have to tell him any of that. All right.
Yeah, no, my lips are sealed.
I had to pay off Steve just to let you get in the front door.
Hey, now that was supposed to be quiet. I'm supposed to keep that on the down low.
You know, it's funny. You know, speaking of which, I actually heard Herner screaming. And I didn't know what was going on, so I went running into the room. He was looking at my model's painting, and he was just screaming. He was like, "You know, what kind of graffiti crap is this?" And you know, I could, Herner, I understand, man.
You made history.
Wait a minute.
Made history.
What did I do?
Yeah, in more ways than one.
Saturday morning, I said, "Hey, I got to judge you and Evan." And you said, "Nope, give us a zero. You are the first players ever to just say, "Hey, give me a zero on paint." And I'm like, "Okay." I called your bluff, and I'm like, okay, there you go, and that was it.
Did I mention, Pat, that I got a 20 out of 22? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that out loud.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You know, Herner, I've never liked him. I really haven't. Hey, gang. I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois. 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. All right, so let's keep it rolling. We got past the news and more, you know, me getting the hell beat out of me here. So, all right, so our guest, we got Steve Herner here to talk to us about Holy Havoc 2019. That was this past November 1st through the 3rd. So, Herner, before we actually get kind of re-back into the main topic here of Holy Havoc, when you have, I guess, when you're literally not building the best gaming tables on the planet, you know, what Age of Sigmar armies do you play? Now, I know we kind of asked you if you played Underworlds, but, I mean, what about tabletop? What, I mean, you've got your Dr. Doom Stormcast. Is that your main army, or what do you normally play?
I guess if you were going to pin me down and ask me what my main army is, it's probably a toss-up between my Sylvaneth and my Dr. Doom Stormcast, the Doom Knights. I do have my rats and hats all round based, and my old Wood Elf army, God rest its soul, is all round based as well. But the rats, I flirted with the rats and all, and they're good for club games. They're good for down here in the basement, but I don't think I would ever bring those guys out to a tournament anymore.
Oh, okay.
But as far as tournament play, it's either the Doom Knights or the Sylvaneth. And then current projects, I have Stormcast will go on forever because they're like, if you own Space Marine Army, it just kind of goes on forever.
Of course.
So Stormcast will go on forever. So I don't really count them as like an army that will ever be completed, right? Because you're always getting new Stormcast.
Right.
So I have my Iron Jaws of the North and then my Slithering Seduction, which are my daughters. My daughters are Kane. The goal would be to have Iron Jaws of the North. My goal previously to the end of this event, before the end of Havoc, was to have Iron Jaws of the North ready to make their debut at Holy Wars.
Right, okay.
But because of the incident that occurred, and I guess we'll get into that a little later, with the venue, now I'm building another table. So we're going to have some stuff. And I have some really, really exciting news about I'm dipping my toe into the professional waters of hobby. I'm going to be doing my first commission painting of a Custodes army. So for 40K. So it's my first endeavor on that front. I'm doing commission painting. So
that is awesome. Really, really cool.
And as far as the commission painting is concerned, just for clarification, I don't do levels, different tiers of options. I only do my level.
Which is stratospheric. It's unbelievable. You're doing such a great job.
Well, thanks. I'm going to be painting armies how I would want them painted, up to what I think is my standard. So I don't do like tabletop standard or anything like that, or beyond tabletop standard. So we're going to see how that goes, and then so I'm starting to ramble, so I'll shut up and let Steve and your other co-hosts say what they're doing.
I love it. I mean, so I know, Dustin, we're going to get into this here a little bit later in the show, but I mean, you're transitioning right now into the OCR Bone Reapers from your Daughters of Cain, which is an awesomely painted army itself.
Yeah, I've been playing.
Dustin, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yes, before, sir.
Just so I don't forget. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'd be curious to see what attracted you to that army.
Let's
take a break right here and go ahead, Dustin. Explain it, man. Let's do it.
Well, I like Daughters of Cain, first of all, because I played Witch Elves, back in Rank and Flank, and it's like, oh, a whole army of Witch Elves, okay. And then they came out with the Snakes, and I'm like, okay, it's even better. It's kind of weird because I looked at most of the Death armies, and I'm just kind of like, okay,
yeah.
I think this is one thing a lot of people liked about the Bone Reapers when they came out. I was always a fan of Tomb Kings.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, this is kind of the closest analog to Tomb Kings we have right now.
Okay.
And I like it because they're just undead. They don't really have vampires or any of that. It's just kind of like, oh, an army of bone golems? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. Also they have kind of that like Mongolian aesthetic almost with a couple of them. And I'm like, okay, I can jive behind this. But also, here's the other thing is, in order to have an effective death army, I don't have to have 90 skeletons.
Yeah.
I can have 20.
It wasn't designed to be that kind
30.
Of death army.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people have been saying it's the undead Stormcast, and that's actually pretty accurate considering the lore behind them also.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. And I also like how their rules are a little bit different with their discipline points. With Daughters of Cain, I've been used to that, so that's that's fine. But they don't have a general that's kind of your linchpin. Each like hero and unit champion can make the whole unit fight better. I mean,
yeah, it's an army
built for a relentless discipline point. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's an army that's based on officers and commanders. It's more martial than it is your traditional undead army, where some necromancer is walking behind a unit and keeping them, you know, keeping them moving.
Yeah.
These things move on their own.
I like that reference, Steve. I like that term, using the term martial. I think that's cool. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely the angle they're going.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Thanks for sharing, man. Appreciate it. Sorry to sidetrack us.
No. I mean, that's one of the things I was going to talk about anyway. So
yeah, we're definitely going to get a little bit. We're going to take a little bit of a deep dive into the Osiark Bone Reapers here very shortly. But keep going with Holy Wars and Holy Hammers. Yeah. So Holy Hammers is your club, Herder, and you guys game pretty regularly. Then I would say, right? First, I think it's the first Saturday every month, just about.
Yeah, our club days are club weekends, our first weekend of every month, and we had a pretty good streak going for a little while. And then the school year starts, and that's when things get a little
A
little iffy. You know, our next club day and the Grimdark Live crew, you guys are all invited.
Awesome.
So it'll be the first weekend of December. I will be sending out an email soon. Start taking dates. Usually what we do, guys, is we'll pick whatever Friday, we'll pick whatever day of the weekend. So counting Fridays, like Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, it all depends on max capacity, right?
Sure.
So, if I've got like four guys come over or whatever, you know, we just wing it. And then if we can't, then we can't.
Yeah. We would absolutely love that. I mean, you know, and also we do war meets. I'm sure you've seen some of the
advice flying around. In fact, I thought about it.
You're always welcome.
We got one coming this weekend, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then we on the 30th as well. No, this weekend, I think it's just some guys getting together, but I know we got the following weekend the and then the 30th. Yeah. The 16th and 30th.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I definitely saw that and I want to get back out there and start doing some more stuff out there in the community, start playing some more games. I've been a bit of a hobbit here at the studio.
You've been unbelievably busy, man. But the end result is awesome. So let me ask you this, Herner. Sure. Are there any armies you just don't care for in the AOS line? You know, either aesthetically or to play against, or both, maybe?
Aesthetically, Bone Reapers. Bone Reapers. As far as playing against, no, I don't mind. I don't really. It's interesting. That's a great question, Pat. You know, like back in fantasy days, there were definitely armies you hated playing against. Like I hated playing against High Elves. I just hated it. And, you know, but in AOS, I really don't find that to be the case. Like even games where I'm playing against Iron Jaws and they were smashing and bashing me off the table, I always felt because of the nature and the way the game is designed that there was always a chance. Like I don't really think I've ever been tabled like in AOS, and I haven't had that experience yet. And I know it's coming. Okay, I know somebody's going to just wallop me or whatever, and it's going to be, you know, take your models off the board kind of thing. I'm going to run into that buzzsaw one day.
Yeah, but, it happens.
Yeah, it does happen. I mean, it kind of happened against Caleb and Scooter at Adepticon 2 years ago during the team event. Quinn and I kind of ran into their Zinch and Iron Jaws combination, and that got a little ugly. But the way Quinn and I decided to play, we decided to play for a draw. So what we did was we bunkered up and we said, all right, you guys are going to, you know, we can't really beat you if we come across. So we're going to just bunker down and, you know, dice roll goes the other way. We win that game. And those two guys are really good players. So, sure. You know, we did our job there with Sylvaneth and Stormcast, and we were holding the line and it almost got there. And you know, Caleb, like Caleb is, he just rolls really, he sometimes rolls really, really well. And those Skyfires did their job. And, but you know, I mean that, so as far as in AOS, you know, aesthetically, it's more about aesthetics, right? So yeah. I'm not a big fan of the Bone Reapers at all. I'm not jazzed about cities. Could care less, really. It just doesn't. I've kind of moved on from the whole thing.
Interesting. Yeah. So I mean, that was what I mean. I know we're I'm kind of taking a left turn at Albuquerque here, but what was it about cities that kind of made you know pull the jalopy over and be like, nah, this isn't for me?
I think it was me building the new Sylvaneth army. Like I, you know, I mean, when AOS dropped, I had all my dryads. I had a whole army prepared for ninth edition. That was going to be ninth edition Warhammer. That was going to be a whole new Wood Elf army. And I had all these models. So I had extra dryads and this whole thing. And then when I decided to just go play Sylvaneth, I closed the door on all of my, I looked at it from the idea that, okay, look, this is a chapter of my hobby life that is over. It's like a book, right? It's like life. It's like, you know, this pad is being a father. Like when you, when your daughter leaves and then when Evan leaves for school, you know, you're into the next chapter. So it's great to have the memories, but I'm not going to wallow in sorrow about the fact that my Bretonians never saw the table in Age of Sigmar. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's time to move on. And so I kind of cut the cord and I feel like from my own perspective, I'm much happier because of that. I'm not bitter about what happened. I've moved on. And, so like with cities, that was a big part of it. Like when the Gladegar got removed, that was a kind of a gut punch when it first happened. But then I was like, you know what? Okay. So be it. Makes sense. You know? You know, but with the cities in general, that's just not my thing. I would be fine if GW, I'm one of these probably rare guys that if GW took all those models that were in cities and then, you know, pushed them into obscurity and said no more, and then just re-released all new humans based around this whole new lore and new designs, I'd be totally fine with that.
Yeah.
But
and I think that's exactly where the game is going.
I was just going to ask you, Steve, you had a great point on the show here about four weeks ago when it broke, when we knew where cities was and we were going through it. So repeat almost what you said before.
It is basically just GW's way of placating the people who still have those models until they have enough time to design a new aesthetic. And I think that the new aesthetic is definitely coming. And I think the first part of it's going to be when we see these new elves that are coming.
Right.
And we've already been getting hints about what they're going to be like, you know, the shadow elves of Malekith. And then you of course have, you know, Tyrion's the much rumored angel elves. Which I don't actually believe is what they're going to look like. I hope not. That's a bogus rumor.
I think you might draw some you might have some similarities between the Cypher Lords. They're from the Realm of Light.
I think that's a good call.
Yeah. You know what? I guess I'm just a spoiled brat. I want the Tolkien elves back. You know, I really do. I know that.
Play Lord of the Rings, dude.
Yeah, I was gonna say play Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, with who?
I have a Lord of the Rings army. If you want to play, dude, I got my guy.
Wait a minute. You and I might be the last ones. I mean, who?
I'll play Lord of the Rings. I'll play it.
All right.
I don't have the new rules, but I'll definitely play it. I mean,
absolutely.
I may absolutely take you up on that, Hunter. Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Has some of the best rule sets of all the GW games that they make.
Yeah. It's kind of funny you bring it up. Another left turn in Albuquerque, I guess. I was actually not too long ago, you know, I'm like, yeah, man, I never did that army of Rohan. I still want to do it. So it's like, there's a part of me that's jonesing to get back to Lord of the Rings. In fact, I was talking to Belle about it, breaking out my elves and redoing all my Galadrums.
It's a great game.
Yeah, I loved it. We have great stories of that game. We have stories of like Gil-galad getting killed by a lonely goblin. You know, in that game, that was almost impossible to kill him. If you remember back when it first came out,
he was tough.
Awesome roll off, and just, you know, it was like Gil-galad caught a spear right in the eye.
Yeah,
toast. It was great. Yeah, it was good stuff. And we still talk about that to this day.
I remember that game, Steve, when it first came out, when they first had that green box set. You remember that?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I bought it.
When the movies were, of course.
Yeah, when the movies were popular. Yeah, that was 17 years ago.
My God, Steve, it was so popular in our store at the time. We actually had a tournament of Lord of the Rings that had 44 people.
That's awesome. Wow.
It was unbelievable. You couldn't believe the amount of enthusiasm for that game.
I mean, that was the main. I didn't even play fantasy then.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't.
My fantasy game was Lord of the Rings, and I played 40K.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what I love about this hobby? You know, I honestly, we started to talk about the potential, I guess, you know, or our thoughts and comments in Cities of Sigmar, potentiality of it kind of being pushed under the rug in the near term to Lord of the Rings. You know, I love
you
how
started
this
started, Gannon.
You know what? Yeah, I start. I don't ever finish anything, but I start just about everything, I think. But no, I got to tell you, I love this hobby because it never fails to open so many doors in the middle of one conversation to a new one. I just love it. I really do. But Dustin, we kind of left you in the dust there. No pun intended. But what do you think, man? Cities of Sigmar. What are your thoughts?
I mean, what I like about Cities of Sigmar again is it's giving a use to models that basically, you know, just had General's Handbook stuff. Which for me, I have a sizable Dark Elf army that has been collecting dust at my shelf. And again, that was one of the things. It's like when Daughters of Cain came out, oh, I can use bottles I have already. Great. I think it's a good step in the right direction because, again, you basically have these people that have Empire and, you know, Wood Elves and stuff and kind of felt marginalized because they were still stuck in the General's Handbook. And it's like, here you go. Here's the battle tome. You can use all of these different armies at once. But I think eventually they are going to come out with humans with a new aesthetic. Of course, the new elves. And I think it's necessary. They had to do it to not, like, alienate a lot of people that still cling to, you know, some of the older stuff. I think it was a smart thing, though. I think it was a really smart thing to kind of bring a lot of borderline stuff back into the...
You know, let's not discount
them. No, I think the Phoenix Temple army can definitely damage.
Absolutely. And that's what was needed, though. They needed an update to bring them on par with, you know, stuff that's been out for a while. So I think it was a good decision.
Well, I mean, look at the Hallow Heart magic user list, where you can have a guy who is casting it like plus five. In other words, they're as good as Nagash when it comes to casting. I mean, it's ridiculous some of the stuff they can put together.
It's gross. It's awesome. It's awesomely gross. And there's definitely legs there. There's a lot of different builds.
Oh yeah.
They hit a home run with the book. It's just not me. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
You know, it's just I've moved on. So it's like I don't really. I mean, yeah, I've just moved on. That's all. I think it's wonderful for players like Dustin. I mean, that's awesome. I love the fact that, and we have Tanya, who has a whole Kislev army.
Tanya is awesome. I want to say that right now. She's awesome.
And so she's going to get to put her Kislev out there somehow, or maybe in cities, or
sure, why not?
Or she's going to be able to use her Dark Elves, same kind of thing. So it's I totally agree with you. It totally made sense. It was the right call. And I'm excited for all those players. I genuinely am. And I'm excited for all the guys who had Tomb Kings who can now use proxies. I mean, that's what Vargas is going to do.
That is happening all over. I've been watching the boards, people doing these awesome conversions. I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
That's basically what I plan on doing with my Bone Reapers that I'm starting. I'm not really going to use them how they look verbatim. I'm going to have to convert, like, all of them, even if it's just a small little thing to make them more like Tomb Kings.
There's some work there. Vargas and I were actually talking about it today, some of his ideas on what he's got, and I have to kind of, God bless him. Sometimes I got to wheel him back in.
You know, I want to throw a shout out to Jason Vargas too. What an unbelievably nice, genuine guy. Every time I see that guy, it's a great handshake. It's a smile. Yep. It's a great, you know, story, and I gotta tell you,
he introduced you and I.
If
it wasn't for you guys playing that day for the primer,
we wouldn't
be sitting here talking
today.
That's right.
So. Vargas is an absolute wonderful, wonderful person, man. He really is.
Oh yeah,
he's definitely credit. But let's do this. Let's kind of start winding down a little bit on this topic, and we will get into the Bone Reapers here in a second. And for everyone kind of, you know, just maybe joining us or kind of to reintroduce it here, our returning guest is Steve Herner, here to talk about the recently completed Holy Havoc 2019 and the upcoming Holy Wars 2020 that I'm really excited for. So let's kind of keep the wheels going here on this, you know, cause I'd like to hear more about the Holy Wars that's upcoming before we get into our, next topic, if we can do that. So Here's what I want to ask you. So, and actually, before I forget, going back to Holy Havoc, I want to give a shout out to the five teams that my son Evan and I played over the two awesome days of Holy Havoc 2019. The first team we played was Thunder Bubbles. You guys, I got to tell you, what a great game. By the way, that was on my favorite table. We played game one, day one, on the Skaven Warpstone table with that multi-headed monster that would come out and get into holy wounds to you if you were 8 inches or less, you know, within 8 inches of it, I guess the best way to put it. And that table to me, I don't know if it was the first table, my first experience with Holy Havoc, but that captured everything in my imagination of, and I could actually like envision everything happening on that table. And, you know, when one of my, you know, Gore almost got eaten by this big monster, or they ended up in the little pools or the rivers and, you know, they're taking wounds. It just, to me, it was, so thematically correct, and it fit the narrative. But the guys that we played, Thunder Bubbles, were just a rip. We had just a great time. ODB, yeah. Old Dirty Bastards. You know, Greg Dupree, I've known you for a long time. You know, and Sean, you guys are lunatics. Love you like brothers. Lich King's Wrath, it was awesome to meet you guys. And I got to tell you, the comic book team, I can't remember their name. Brendan Lynch and Dominic Rittman were the two guys. I remember their names. I don't remember the name of their team. I'm drawing a blank, but I have the comic book sections currently over my hobby desk. So great guys. And you got to touch on that a little
Circle
bit.
City. Circle City.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what. Thank you very much. And finally, Gut Gold. And I got to say this, Kenny Lull, thanks for the cologne, man. You saved all of us.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
did you hear about that?
No, I didn't hear about it, but I could smell it.
Dude, I will tell you what. Somebody sold their ass to the devil. That was the most and look, I'm used to strange smells, man, but that was something.
It's going
to
be better in the new hall. So we got a lot more air coming. Yeah. We got a lot higher ceiling.
Hopefully some more air changes. But yeah, Kenny Lull saved all of us. But yeah, so I really wanted to give a shout out to Steve, come on, man. You had some great games. I heard you guys over there laughing. I mean, you played Gut Gold as well, right?
Yes, I did. I was, Gary and I played them, I think, game 4.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, that's the team I faced on the Venetian table.
The Floating City.
No, the Venetian table, the Sigmarite table.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Gary and I had a blast against those guys. They were so much fun to play.
That was.
I didn't have one bad game. I mean, single one of the groups of guys I faced, you know, they were all great guys. Gary and I never had more fun that entire weekend. It was just a blast from start to finish.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to talk about in my closing comments.
Yep. And Herner, I want to say something. I want to ask you this. For you, we're talking about us right now and our experience at the event, and I feel like in a way we're kind of taken away from all the hard work and everything that you did to put this together. But were there any standout moments from this weekend that you'd like to share? Were anything that you kind of stood back and noticed?
Yeah, I mean, just the utter joy and laughter of the players. There wasn't ever a moment where a player like got angry about something that happened on the table. I mean, there was just, there's genuine love in that room that's one of the things that we try to do with the Holy Chosen. You know, I want this to be an event that people really, really enjoy. And, you know, but when we went to the matchups, the way we do our matchups and table assignments, that changed really the fundamental personality of the event to being an event of guys just coming together and laughing and having a good time.
Yeah,
and that's really what changed everything for me this year. I mean, when we had the, you know, there was a rough start, you know, I went up and I talked to Belle, and she said, go downstairs and just take a look at everybody and we'll look at their faces and you're going to understand what this is really about. And then I went down there. It was like halfway through game one. I went down there and, you know me, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. So as I started to evaluate and see what was going on, you guys didn't care what had happened. You guys were just having a blast. It was like it didn't even happen. And like I felt bad for you, the player. And I was like kind of taking it all upon myself and just watching the utter joy. So that's one of that was the overwhelming takeaway. And then there's moments. There's these little moments here and there of tournament. There's stories of tournament rerolls. There's all these different things. But I think by far, by a country mile, the standout was Dominic Reitman and his I am Hop.
Yes.
Warlord,
yes.
And his comic book and him embracing the narrative. And what Dom did was he got a little photo printer and he literally created a photo comic book of his Warlord and his teammates Warlord's adventures throughout the entire weekend.
Right.
So he was taking pictures and in between dice rolls, he was commenting on what was happening. It was absolutely, absolutely amazing. And that is what Holy Wars and Holy Havoc are all about.
I think just I'm going to try to, I think there's some pictures of it. I'm going to try to pull that up real quick just for people that are kind of looking at the screen here. They can take a look at it. But
I have to say, like, not to cut you off, I have to say, like, when you have narrative reasoning behind why your army is fighting, that's one of my favorite things. Because
great.
Because then you kind of, you know, create a little narrative and, oh, this character died or this character got wounded by this general, whatever. And then you just have this interesting thematic story behind the game that you're playing, and it actually sticks in your mind a little bit better instead of just, oh, I played, you know, this Warhammer game and I lost or whatever. And it's like, no, this unit murdered this unit and this character stood off against this unit and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And that really speaks to the heart and soul of why we did what we did, what I, the reason Holy Wars is the holy events are structured in the manner that they're structured is my sons and I, when we first started playing all these games, when we started playing Lord of the Rings and we started playing 40K, we didn't follow points, right? We just said, all right, let's put everything on the table. Let's just see what happens. And here's our goal. This is what we want to do.
So you were like and early AOS one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we did. Yeah, we just didn't do it. We took every single model. It didn't matter. We had this, we just did these outrageous and crazy things and we had so much fun with it. And then that's when we developed, when the Holy Hammers came around, we continued to do that with a little bit more structure, and the structure was points, but we still had the density of terrain and we still had the crazy rules and we still did all this really cool stuff. And then I was like, you know, I think that every time somebody would come over, right? So we might have friends come over, or friends from another club who play Warhammer or 40K or Lord of the Rings.
Right.
They would come over and they'd be like, dude, this is awesome. You got to, how do we get more people to do this? And so then that was the idea, was to take, you know, take what we do here at the HQ in my basement and bring it to the rest of the world.
Sure.
You can see how we play Warhammer, because we don't play it conventionally. You know, well, it's kind of like what Jervis has always said in his interviews, is that it's just play the game and have fun. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
And I think we get, as a community, we kind of get bogged down in the competitive.
We do.
Too much.
We do.
And so what I wanted it to was to try to grow a narrative event that went beyond 10 people, right? That went beyond maybe, you know, a few people here and there, the shop who are competing in like some type of escalation league or something, where maybe you do something of this nature. And it speaks volumes, the growth and what's happened. So,
right. And you know, I'm going to say this right now, you know, nobody knows better than our guest, Steve Herner, knows it's not easy running tournaments. And in many ways it's a thankless job. You know, Steve Herner has also kicked it up a notch by literally being an event organizer and a general carpenter by building tables. But Herner, let me ask you this, and honestly, is it still gratifying for you? Do you see yourself doing this for a while?
I don't know. If you were to ask me that question before the event, I would have told you maybe not much longer. But then, you know, the weekend, and I would have told you that Sunday night after the event, I would have told you, sign up soon, you know, sign up when we do this, because who knows how much longer. But then, you know, things change and everything happens for a reason. And on Monday, you know, when I was down, for your listeners that don't know, we had an issue with the venue. Is it all right if I get into this, Pat?
Go ahead, man. That's fine. It's your time, dude. Right. Yeah.
I'm not going to reveal a lot, but let's just say that the venue kind of went back on what, you know, what we agreed to, and they went back and then they actually got a little. It got what I wouldn't say ugly, probably not the right word to use, but they were, I would say they were disrespectful to our players and our attendees. And so I was kind of like thinking to myself that Holy Wars was going to have to be canceled. Because I know how hard it can be to find a venue. And I, you know, Monday morning, you know, we spent after this. So the incident with the general manager at the venue happened. What were you guys in? Maybe 30 minutes into your first game?
That's the whole part where they talked about coolers and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It was less than that. We were maybe 15 minutes into our game.
Yeah, probably even less. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. So essentially, you know, I had to go into the hall and tell everybody that the rules were changing. And the rules not for our event, but for the venue. You know, the venue said you can't have open alcohol. They said you can't have you can't drink the coffee or the water. And I was like, what? I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I was just kind of in shock. And they even accused some players of stealing breakfast without any evidence of it. It was like, it was ridiculous. And so at that point, I was ready. I was kind of like, all right, well, you know, so me and the crew, we got together while you all were playing the games, and we were scouring the internet looking for something, right? Something that we could do. And so we were thinking VFW Hall. You know, we were thinking, okay, maybe we could do it someplace there, somewhere cheap, get us a little bit more space. But Sunday night when we were packed up and we were driving back to the HQ, I had resigned myself to the idea that I would be canceling Holy Wars in February. And wow. I was ready to refund everybody their money. I sent an email out Saturday night to all the Holy Wars players saying that this had happened. Not the gruesome details, but just that we had a problem with the venue. We need to look for a new venue and we might have to cancel. And I told them more info to come. And then Monday morning, you know, I'm going to the office and I'm like, you know, why don't I just, something told me to turn down Deal Road in Naperville. I did. Drove down few blocks and then I saw Embassy Suites. I pulled in there to see, hey, maybe, you know, who knows? Let's see. Let's talk. Met this wonderful event person, sales rep named Kelly. I told her what we were all about, what we were doing. She said, let me show you our hall. And then boom, now we have a new hall. And suddenly we have Holy Wars happening again. And now we have Havoc reserved. So we're going to be back in 2020 with a great new venue with more space, more dining options. I mean, it's an amazing location. And I was talking to her today, just today after we were taking some measurements about the idea of 2021. And she laughed and said, well, why don't you see if you like us after the first event? And I said, okay. But you know, we're going to be riding this out for a little bit. We're going to see. It did force us to increase our cost. Right. But the players were absolutely amazing. You know, the majority of the players chipped in an extra $10 to help us cover the expenses of a new hall.
Sure.
And it was fantastic. It's fantastic. So I think, you know, somebody's trying to tell me that I'm supposed to keep doing this event to keep raising money for the homeless. And we're going to keep riding it out for a little bit longer.
Well, I tell you what, man, and it will continue to be successful. So let's roll right into, you know, I know that we're going to be getting into our next topic here in a little bit, but let's roll right into Holy Wars 2020. I mean, I think that's a perfect segue. So now we got the new venue, we got the new space, and I got to get my rear end on the freaking waiting list, I guess. Now, Steve, you ready? Yeah. Let's get on, Dustin. Let's get on that waiting list, man. Come on.
Hey, if I go, I'm bringing the trolls.
That'd be awesome.
Don't,
I would love to see it.
Don't threaten me or her, man.
No one's ever done that, dude. Steve, you got to do it. I would love to see it. Well,
yeah, I have a full, full 2K troll army.
Yeah, I don't think there's been a troll army at one of our events.
Hey,
yeah,
Erner, so let me ask you a question. You know, go ahead. For as long as you know we've known each other, what about novelers? If a guy showed up with 2,000 points of novelers, would you?
Steve did not come on the show to talk about trash.
Wait a minute. You know, hold on a minute. You know,
are you going to have them all painted to a high level?
You know what? I'll tell you what. I'll take that challenge.
Yeah,
I'll take that challenge.
Spray paint. All right.
Okay. All
right. Hey, Herner, don't listen to these guys. You know, I don't know why they're even. I mean,
so anyway, so let's stay on topic, right? Stay on target, right? Holy Wars. All right. So we got to a new venue. We at the old venue we were capped at 30 players, and so with the new venue, I was able to expand. I was able to bring in my two other tables that I wasn't able to bring to the old venue. And now I'm going to be adding a third table. So we're going to have 18 tables, which then means we get to invite 36 players. And, you know, we weren't quite sold out before the change of venue and the change of weekend. And now we're sold out with three on the wait list. So pretty awesome.
If somebody wanted to get on the wait list, how could they do that?
Just email me at holywarsgt at Gmail. That's holywarsgt@gmail.com. And then our website is holywarsgt.com. And it's got all the relevant information in there. It's $75 to sign up for a holy event. But if you don't get in, I refund it, of course. That wouldn't be fair. So with the new event, because we can add in the three additional tables, I have to write three additional scenarios. And that's the segue for Holy Wars. That's what separates Holy Wars from Holy Havoc. Now, okay. Holy Havoc kind of functions in a similar situation where, you know, you have five games with five scenarios. Everyone's playing the same scenario. And the variable there is your warlord and what your warlord does throughout the game and how you upgrade your warlord throughout the weekend.
Got it.
Now, with Holy Wars, the difference is it is 18 unique scenarios designed around the table and the terrain. So you'll never have, if you played on a different table each game, you would have a unique experience each game.
Okay.
So they're different deployments, different objectives. They're the only common thing between them are the Grail objectives. We have a something called a Grail objective, and then there's the secret missions. But as far as the main scenario and how the tables play, it's 18 unique scenarios. So
that is so awesome. But now you're right back in the barrel again. You're working like a madman again. More tables and everything.
Yeah, I have another table to do. It's the what I'm calling the Iron Jaws of the North table. So it's gonna be another snow table. And it's gonna be utilizing. There's a picture on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter at Holy Hammer Hearn.
Right.
I posted it yesterday of the basic layout of the table. So it's got the old Warhammer Fortress and some of the guard towers from the Manor kit.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Going to make up the, if you would, Winterfell, right, of the Iron Jaws.
There you go.
I'm going to call Wagfell, I think.
that's awesome.
I haven't decided if I'm going to orc it all up yet. I mean, I guess I should like, you know, do that. But I'm not 100% sure if I am or not. And it's going to have a huge frozen lake on the surface, and then there'll be a watch post in the middle of the lake, and then there'll be some kind of funky rules if you know when you're going across the ice. So we'll see what happens.
Of course, well, you know, I am so looking forward to this. Now that's going to be February 2020. What are the exact days in February again?
Yeah, good question, Pat. Let's see. I should have that, just be able to rattle it, but I had to change it. February 21, 22, and 23.
Yep.
Now, the difference here, yeah, the difference between this, because we're at a new venue, we're not going to have the level of flexibility on Friday night. We'll be setting up on Friday night. But hopefully, you know, Vargas and I got it pretty down to a science. We should be able to get everything set up. I do predict that we'll still have open gaming Friday night, but we might not. Usually we have our table set up by like 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon. So what's going to change now is that we won't have the open gaming Friday night until probably later, you know, probably more like 8 o'clock.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, so it'll be something like that.
Oh, gamers don't care. I mean, that's like lunchtime for most gamers.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Exactly. that whole weekend, I'm pretty much up till 1 a.m. anyway.
There you go. But you know what, honestly, Herner, you got to be so proud of yourself and your accomplishments, man. I'm not really, Pat.
I mean, I'm more proud of the community supporting us, to be honest with you. I'm overwhelmed, and I'm very, very grateful that players from all over come to our event. It's just a small event, you know. And it's really awesome. I think it speaks to a couple things. That speaks to the hospitality. You know, Vargas and I really want to try to make everybody feel like that they belong there. You know, we really try to get to know people.
That.
We definitely try to talk to people. We're constantly asking people if they're having a good time. You know, because we want to know, and we take feedback too. So that's the other unique thing about Holy events. So like, you know, there, as you guys know, on the, to use Steve's term, the Venetian table. That table had those sewers, right, or colacas, which is the Latin term for sewers.
Right.
Anyway, and those rules were – I left key rules off of there. My son Ethan really gave me a hard time about that when he came out on Sunday when he realized how broken the table was. He looked at me. He's like, Dad, I told you that you had to put that in there. I'm like, yeah, I forgot. And I'm like, you know,
that's proofreading. That's hysterical.
Proofreading's a skill. So that table did some major damage to a lot of people. But, like – I realized that was happening, and so I immediately went to my design file and I updated the rules. So that's one of the unique things too about our event is that we're constantly streamlining. Okay, so nothing's ever locked in.
So everything pretty much is a living, breathing document as far
absolutely.
As the holy events are concerned.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. In fact, things change all the time. Like I explained to players, you know, there's going to be about 6 maps, I think, that are going to change from Holy Wars to Holy Havoc.
Right.
All right. So I'm sorry, from Holy Havoc to Holy Wars. So there's going to be some new stuff. There's always something new happening at our event when it comes to scenarios, when it comes to, and that's the other thing about our event is that it's not scenarios from the book. None of that.
Yeah.
It's all unique.
They're all original. You wrote them all.
All this is all unique. So you're going to get a whole different experience when you come to our event.
Yeah, I guess, but I'm sure Dustin and Steve may have a couple of questions for you, but I got to ask one that's been on my mind, and I'm not anywhere near the level of TO or event organizer you are at all. But, you know, I've always heard the term, you know, for every day of a tournament, it's a month of prep time. Now, you've completely taken that analogy and blown it completely out of the water.
Well, we're smaller, though. I mean, I guess, well, it's kind of intimidating, I guess, because, if we decide to bring 18 tables to Holy Havoc, we could fit 72 people in the room. So that's getting pretty big.
Yeah. But you want to stay small, don't you?
I do want to stay small. I don't want to, you know, I flirted briefly with the idea of going to 100. But I don't think I want to do that. I don't know about that, Pat. I don't know if that's a true assessment for us. You know, this thing has kind of become, over the last few years, it's definitely become more of a one-man show. I don't really chart my time. It's just a part of my life. I come downstairs after a long work day, after dinner with the family, and I come down here and I work and I do my stuff. And so I don't really chart the time. So I don't know if that's true, what you said about tournaments and time.
Yeah, that's just what I've heard.
I've heard that too. No, I've heard that too. I think though, you know, like I'm kind of doing this every single day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just my hobby, but like, I'm thinking about the event. I'm thinking about the scenarios. So I'm tweaking things or trying to find ways to make things better. I might not be working on something every day, but you know, yeah, maybe they are right. Maybe I do too much. I don't know.
You know what? It's perfect. So I guess to kind of wrap up the Holy Wars, Holy Havoc, and really the Holy events, right? That's more proper term, I guess. How can you sum up the Holy events for folks that have never heard of this, but you know, besides calling them meatheads for not hearing about great events like this, but how can you sum up Holy events for folks that may have never heard of this, of these tournaments before?
Well, it's a narrative tournament that the experience is unique because the tables are all unique. The terrain is all unique. It's got unique rules. The terrain is interactive. That's a real thing that separates us from other events, is that terrain is static at other events. There's terrain here at our event where you actually move it across the board and cause damage, and it fights for you or it fights against you. And that's unusual for a tournament. The terrain is more get in the way and maybe cause some minor inconveniences at a conventional tournament, where this tournament, it's not like that. It's like being on the battlefield and you're slugging through mud.
Right.
Or if it's in like Game of Thrones, the Battle of the Bloody Bastards, fighting on a muddy field and in terrible conditions.
That's true.
So
that's
what makes it different.
You're
so
almost living the experience while you're pushing the models across table.
Yeah, I think so. That's definitely part of it. It's a narrative event. It's not a competitive event in any way, shape, or form. We have one competitive award, and that award is solely based on battle points. It's not based on an overall cumulative score. All the soft scores are used for tiebreakers, so they're still important to score well in your soft scores, because like I said, they do go to tiebreakers. But it's about the narrative, it's about the hobby.
Right.
And that's
right.
The thing about our event that I think that's how you sum it up, the narrative and the hobby.
I would say that it's great, you know, and I got to tell you, you know, to me, part of the success has to be because of you, because of Jason Vargas, because of the entire Holy Hammers crew. I mean, every single person I've met from your crew are just unbelievably wonderful people. And I've said it 100 times in the past, you know, I think birds of a feather flock together. And I think you guys have cultivated an environment that draws together like-minded people. I'm just happy that I didn't embarrass the hell out of you, get thrown out. I mean, I'm just happy that didn't happen.
We almost did.
You know, there was a couple of close calls there, but I held it together. I know we got a couple more topics to get to. We got, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the Osiark Bone Reapers. I know that Dustin wants to get to that, and we're going to talk a little bit about the question of the day and some closing thoughts. Can you hang with us for a little bit longer, or do you got to run?
I got a few more minutes. I can probably hang.
Nice. All right, good. So, wait a minute. What the hell is that? What's going on?
And now, it's time for that part of the show where we present the rules from hell.
Yes, that's right, Grimdark Goons. It's time for the rules from hell, where we present the game rules from the past or present of the Warhammer worlds that just sucked.
Here it is, gang, the Warhammer rule from hell. In the early edition of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, this rule dealt with tomb swarms. This is known as the Underground Scuttler's Rule. Instead of setting up a tomb swarm on the battlefield, you can place it to one side and say that they are set up beneath the ground. In any of your movement phases, you can set up the unit on top of the battlefield more than 9 inches from an enemy unit. This is the unit's move for that movement phase. The unit can burrow back underground
in any of your future movement phases. If it does, remove the unit from the battlefield. It can return in a later turn. If you have many fewer units in your army than the opponent, you can choose to instantly win the game if your army survives for 6 turns. As your army, take a couple of tomb swarms and burrow them forever. Wait 6 turns, win. Complete bullshit. Glad this rule is gone. That was definitely a rule from hell.
And now you know, a rule from hell.
All right, let's get back to the show. Dustin, Steve, we swamped you, man. I know that you wanted to get to the Oshark Bone Reapers, and I kind of want to hear about a little bit of the conversion from Daughters of Cain and kind of some thoughts. And I'd like to kind of pick up the topic where we left off before, when we were kind of having our opinions of the Bone Reapers. And it sounded like some hot and cold on it. You know, we like the fact that Tomb Kings are coming back, but maybe the models themselves looked a little clunky. But I'm going to throw it over to you guys, man. Roll.
Yeah. And some of my friends, their thoughts mirror mine a little bit. There are a couple things I don't like about the Bone Reapers, mainly the crotch goblin on the harvester. Do you know about this?
No, not necessarily. But I mean, let's go back before we get to the crotch goblin. I don't know why a novel just popped into my mind, but what is it? What was it that drew you to? I mean, you kind of briefly touched on it before. Kind of quickly, kind of go through that again, and then we'll kind of get into the.
Well, yeah, I mean, they kind of remind me of Tomb Kings.
Yeah, right.
But also, I just kind of like the idea of, you know, they're not skeletons, they're bone golems, basically.
Right.
And I don't know, like, in some of, you know, years past, some of the Magic the Gathering cards I played, a lot of the units were like these weird golem constructs, and some of the artwork in that reminds me of, Bone Reapers, actually. And so, aside from making, you know, converting some of my Bone Reapers to look like Tomb Kings, I think I'm going to, you know, maybe style them a little bit off of some of the art on those cards, because I don't know. I just like the idea of, you know, a bunch of bone golems, you know, that are coming after you to steal your bones.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the whole backstory, the Oshark Bone Reapers, as far as the tie the bones and that whole video that was playing. I think there was 6 of them or something like that, I believe. But Steve, what are your thoughts on the Bone Reapers? I know that you had a couple of things you wanted to kind of touch on with those guys as well.
Not really so much on the Bone Reapers themselves, just in death in general. I think they're a nice addition to the death line of figures. Personally, I have no interest in death until vampires come out. That is the army I'm waiting for. And until that happens, I'm probably not going to find much interest in death, but I think this is a great way to placate the Tomb King players that have been dying, no pun intended, for their army to return. And I think this is the best they're going to get. I mean, this is the best they're going to get. And I think it's going to be a very successful army until, you know, the next Meta Chaser army comes out.
Yeah, I think that I know that, you know, Herner, you kind of chimed in. You didn't really think much of the Bone Reapers, I guess. But I mean, have you looked through the book and kind of seen what they're all about and seen some of their? Well, I guess there was one or two guys that were playing them at Holy Havoc, right?
No, they were playing the new ogres.
Okay, I thought somebody had a Bone Reapers army there. Maybe they brought it.
They don't even have all the models out yet.
Somebody was building them, but okay. Not playing them.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, like a lot of the main model line basically came out this past weekend.
Okay.
And then like the rest of it is up for pre-order.
Yep.
But at least that I saw, like with Bone Reapers, I don't know, because again, Tomb King's aesthetic, but I just thought it'd be cool to have, you know, just a bunch of the units of the Mortec Guard, which there's actually, I mean, what's crazy about them is with all their command abilities and stuff, you could have 3 units of Mortec Guard and then one of their casters, which is a mortician, and there's a battalion that Again, every unit has their own command ability that you use for a discipline point. And instead of generating a command point like you would normally at the start of your turn, at the start of the battle round, you get a discipline point for each hero in your army, each liege, which is basically the mounted fighting heroes. And then you roll a die for each unit in your army, and each time you roll a six, you get another discipline point.
Right, and, that's nice, more like the command points, right?
Yeah, they're kind of different command points, but specifically for them. But what's great is you get them at the start of the battle round, so even if you go second, you still have points you can use. And just for example, your basic troops, the Mortec Guard, in the combat phase, you can use a discipline point and they can reroll armor saves just because you have a point, which is great because if you get charged, that's okay. I'm just going to reroll all my armor saves. And especially if you take one of the legions you can take, just across the board, the whole army gets plus one their armor save. So your basic troop has a 3+ save. That's nuts.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Not to mention they also have elite troops that with a battalion can have a 2+ save.
Yeah.
And that would be their Necropolis Stalkers.
Yeah, there's a lot of different combos I think you'll be able to do. Unfortunately, some of the legions are just blatantly better than some others. Like there's one where the whole army just ignores spells and a 5+ or effects of spells.
Yeah.
And then there's a command ability that changes that effect to a 2+. So if your opponent has magic, okay, I'm going to be this legion. I'm just going to negate all your
yeah.
Your
you're
spells.
Literally shutting down a Tzeentch army completely.
But it's also useless against an army that has no magic. So sadly, that one is weird because it's not. Okay, yeah. In multiple situations, it's either
it's
good or bad.
Yeah, it's
like the Bane, like Praetorian Legion, which is Katakros, the Mortarch, like his main Legion or whatever. For them, their command ability, it lets a unit reroll all hits, which having Dars of Cain and having played Haknar, that's always good, rerolling hits.
Oh, yeah.
But also, like, some of the other, like, command traits and stuff you get with it aren't amazing. But I think with the right units chosen and you choose the right legion, you'll be able to get a lot of different combos to fit your playstyle. Like, here's the problem. I already want to collect two different armies of Bone Reavers. I want to have a bunch of troops with spears. And then I want to have just an all cavalry army because they have a legion where their trait is they can run and charge. And then for a command ability, they can retreat and charge in the same turn. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, because they also, all the cavalry units get a bonus when they charge. So, it's boosting an army that's good at one thing and units that are good at one thing and making it even better. Now, granted, if you play on a table, there's not a lot, there's a ton of terrain, and it's not going to be good for fast maneuverable units. Well, I mean, that's going to suck, but I like how a lot of the legions are going with very thematic abilities. I mean, there's one legion where they explode and your opponent takes mortal wounds because they're literally just like radiating fire inside their like skeletons, which is bizarre but awesome at the same time.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most versatile armies that you're going to get, at least from Death.
Yeah.
And I think that was the way, obviously, they designed them, because this is, as I stated earlier, this army is based on martial prowess. So yeah. It is designed so that you can play all these variants and play them successfully. It's very much an army based on synergy, as most armies are, but this one in particular. But I like where you're going with it. I think it'll I think that you could have various successful armies with this book.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of an
now,
interesting.
Now I have a question for you. Why is it? What was it about this army, Dustin, that basically converted you from daughters?
What
drew
mean,
you out of daughters to this?
I don't know. They're just interesting because they're not regular death. Like, they're not the vampire counts. They're not, you know, flesh eater courts. They're not, you know, they're just different. Enough from regular death, you know, there's something new and interesting. And plus, I just like the idea of a bunch of bone golems stuffed with souls, and that's your army. It's funny, the D&D campaign I'm working on, the golems are very prevalent, and so it kind of speaks to me. I'm like, oh, that's a really cool idea. But also, just, they kind of have that Eastern, you know, almost Tomb Kings feel, and part of that is just kind of like, okay, I kind of want to collect these just because they remind me of Tomb Kings, so.
Okay, so it was an army based mostly on the aesthetic that drew you in.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Again, there's some models I have problems with, but that's what converting is for. Like, and I understand what they're going with, but, you know, you have your standard, like, skull face, and then you have a bone face that still has, like, a nose on it. I don't know, that bothers
me.
Some
of those faces are just
so
creepy as hell.
Oh, I mean, I'm okay with the creepiness, but I'm still going to just make them look like, you know, skeletons or whatnot. But I'm not a fan of the Gothic Harvester, though. The big, tall construct or whatever.
Yeah, the guy that has a guy in, like, the belly area.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, according to the actual lore, like, the guy controlling it is the skeleton hanging out in the crotch, and he picks up bones and, like, transports them up to the cage on the back, and I'm just like, that's a little silly for me.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously going to be an army that's not going to appeal to everyone, especially death players. I mean, I've heard death players say, I'm passing on this one. I think this is going to be a good holdover army until the vampires come, because for many people, like including myself here, I'm a traditionalist. I want Gothic vampires. I want old school death. And so far, I have not found any of that in any of the current death armies. And so I think the Bone Reapers are going to be a great army, like I said, as a holdover. I think they'll be popular for a while. But I think the minute vampires are released, you're going to see Bone Reapers on eBay like you've never seen any army ever before. I hope that's not the case, but I think that's what's going to happen. Just a thought.
Yeah, well, it you know what, I'm looking forward to it. I kind of have to harken back to a little bit of what Hertner said. I'm going to enjoy playing against them more than I think I ever would playing them.
I totally agree.
Of course, that's not exactly the word Hertner used. Hertner, how did you phrase it again?
I don't remember.
But you know what, I love the fact, one thing that
shows you how excited he is to play him.
I think he was back sleeping on one of his tables again.
No, I think what everything Dustin said, it makes complete sense from his perspective. I get it. There's a part of me, like, for example, my Stormcasts are not human inside. Like, to me, my Doom Knights are souls encased in Sigmarite armor. Fell in love with that aesthetic, and I think GW did it right with this army to build that, because that's what attracted me originally to the Stormcast, was that concept. You know, that very first artwork we had of the Stormcast with the glowing eyes, that spoke to me, right? And then they got all that outrage, and then GW, in their infinite wisdom, changed it a little bit, in my opinion. That's how I interpreted what they did. And now, finally, here you go. You've got your kind of golem, you know, your souls encased in this armor. The thing that I don't like about it is, it's like, I don't think they've, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know. So, like, the lore is that their armor is made from the bones that they harvest, yes?
Correct.
Okay.
Their bodies are made from the bones.
Okay, yeah. So they have a separate armor then? On top of their bones, is that
it looks that way on some of the models, but I think generally the whole idea is just like each one
they're
is
bone constructs. Yeah.
Yeah. They're bone constructs.
They're bone constructs. And to me, I don't see that. You know what I mean? Like for me visually, it doesn't work just from a design standpoint. Like I kind of like the idea if it was like not bone constructs, but if it was just these guys were, it was like armor, right? Like made of bone, right? That like that the bone is ground down and it's this armor, kind of like Sigmarite, right? And then these souls are inside of it. I probably could have done.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have spoke to me more from a design, visual, creativity standpoint. But I mean, I'm super stoked for you and for all the Toon King players, and I think that's awesome. I would like to ask Steve a question though, if I may.
Sure.
What's wrong with Flesh Eater Courts from a death perspective?
Just personally, or you?
Yeah,
just,
like you said, you're waiting for traditional like, vampire. I mean, that's ghoul, right?
I like the more Karstein vampire.
Ah, okay. So true. You're talking true.
Aristocratic.
Yeah, I'm more of a traditionalist. Okay. Gotcha. I like the graveyard with like your vampire knights and your vampire cavalry. That's just my style.
Gotcha. That's what my son likes. Yeah. Cool.
Well, yeah.
So,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
I just had this funny thought. Because I imagine many people that play 40K have noticed the similarities between the Bone Reapers and Necrons.
No.
Really?
No.
Really?
Really? I don't know. I just thought it'd be funny. And I saw somebody do this with their Death Army. But, you know, you have your Bone Reapers and you paint them metallics and they're from the realm of metal.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But yeah. I don't know.
Not a bad idea.
Not bad at all. In fact, I could see some of these models creeping into a Necron army.
I could see that. Yeah.
And vice versa, too. Vice versa now.
That'd be neat. Yeah, I could see that happening. I never put the parallel together, but yeah.
Using the Seitan for that guy who looks like the sculpture of David, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that could totally work for a conversion, which would be really original and look pretty cool.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. Well, good stuff, man. So I guess if it's all right, we're kind of winding the show down here, and I want to get a couple. We got two more things to get out of the way. So we got the point in the show where we start with the question of the day. So I'm going to throw this over to Herner first, and I'm going to then Dustin, you're getting the question of the day next. But something we do at the end of or towards the end of every show, I should say. But so Herner, here it is for you, man. Here's the question of the day. What are some ways a gaming group can help to foster a more cohesive community?
Good Lord. Well, go to somebody else. Let me think about it a little bit more.
Okay. Do you mean specifically just the Warhammer community or?
I'll speak specifically to the, you take your pick. Warhammer, Age of Sigmar or 40K. What are some ways a gaming group, you know, like Grimdark or Holy Hammers, can help foster a more cohesive community?
Oh, I have an answer now.
Okay, back to Herner. Go there. You go.
Yeah. Go ahead. I think what we've tried to do with the Holy Hammers is we've tried to take our event where we meet a lot of new people, and if those people are local, we try to get them to come out to a club game, to get to know them, to try to bring them into the community, or make maybe bring them into our little section of the community to show them that there's a group of people out there that might be like-minded in the style of gameplay and being, and having your club be open-minded to bringing in new potential members or just new people to game with, but being open-minded to it, being flexible.
I love it. That's a good answer. All right, Dustin, to you, man.
I would say, you know, something that has been said many times on the show is, you know, the social contract that we have between gamers. You know, just, and also not to quote Bill and Ted, but be excellent to everyone.
Right.
But no, I mean, you know, just be a good group of people that want to play games, want to hang out, and also, you know, promote other people that want to play Age of Sigmar or you know, in 40K and whatnot. You know, I mean, you see people playing at your local gaming store, you know, find out what they're playing, you know, say, hey, you know, we play, you know, at this venue at these times, and you know, just be nice, I guess. You know, I mean,
yeah,
we don't have to be elitist with our gaming groups, you know, because I'll be honest, like, you know, I went through a long stretch of not having a gaming store, like when I was in high school. And it sucked because basically the only people that I knew that played were my cousins. And so now with the internet and stuff like that, you know, it's a lot easier to find people. But still, like, you know, it's just one of those things, like, you know, just, we play this game to have fun, you know, so you don't have to be, you know, elitist and exclude people and, oh, you play 40K, not Age of Sigmar, you know, okay. Well, no, like we're all in this hobby together, so let's, yeah, you know, have fun.
That's right.
Here, here.
Steve, what do you say, man?
Well, I will combine my answer with the closing thoughts, if that's,
okay, yeah. Well, you know, we'll piggyback the your answer with the closing thoughts. Good one. Good.
You want me to begin now?
Yeah, go.
Okay. There's an old saying in the teaching profession: a child will rarely remember what you say, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And when I think of events like Holy Wars and Holy Havoc, I think of that teaching saying, and I'm going to tell you why. This weekend, I saw a bunch of guys get together and laugh and kid with each other and rib each other and have a good time. Guys went out to dinner with each other and enjoyed each other's company. And then at the close of this event, I saw lots of shaking hands and hugs and laughter and even a few tears. And I think that speaks very well for the man who is behind it, and that would be you, Steve.
And I
say this with no sycophancy whatsoever. You are the moral compass of this gaming community. And I say that with the utmost statement. Sincerity.
Well, thanks. That's a lot to live up to, Steve. Thanks.
No, but I say it out of complete sincerity, and I mean that. You are setting an example for others to follow.
Wow.
You know, Pat and I often talk about this. No one is ever going to remember how many plastic dolly trophies you won in your lifetime. No one is ever going to be at your eulogy someday saying, well, he was the best order player. But people are going to remember how you made other gamers feel and how you were on that table.
Thanks, man.
And so when I think of my closing thoughts here, if there were more people in this hobby that had your way of thinking, Steve, and your goodness and your righteousness, because I think raising $10,000 for the homeless is it makes you a righteous man. And I don't mind saying that. And I have no, problem saying that to you, that you are a righteous man. And I think that that speaks to you. It speaks to the character of your group, and it speaks to the character of the people that participate in your events as we play this hobby that we love.
Oh, well, thank you. Those are some very heartfelt and generous words. I'm almost speechless. So, wow. Thank you for saying that, Steve.
And I mean it. And I think that most of the guys that are part of your events mean it as well. So I just wanted to say thank you, not only to you, but to all of the phenomenal people that were helping you run that event, like Bell and the gentleman that was putting in all the scores outside.
Jason Vargas. Yeah. Vargas.
What is this man's name?
Vargas. Jason Vargas. Yeah, Jason Vargas.
I went up to Jason during the tournament and I said to him, you know, I want to thank you for dedicating your time to, you know, to watching other people have fun. And I think it really does speak to the character of the people that you associate with, Steve.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks a lot.
So God bless you, and God bless what you do for the, you know, the people outside of this community.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying all that. That's very generous and very humbled by you saying that. I just don't really know how to respond other than to say thank you.
Well, it sounds like you just did.
Yeah.
No, honestly, you know what? And I guess I'm not going to, there's nothing I can do to steal that thunder. And that's how we all feel, Herner, honestly. But I guess for me, if I were to ask my own same question, you know, it's what we talk about on the show, you know, the social contract to gaming, you know, when somebody comes into a store, be approachable. You know, I know that, the guys that all game in the Grimdark group, I affectionately call them the Grimdark Goons. We're loud. We're laughing. We're usually the biggest and the loudest group in the store. And we sometimes people can look at us like, you know, the Hell's Angels are rolling dice. What is happening over there? But we always accommodate, and we have these things called war meets, and we put them out there, and we always say to people, you know, we'll play down to the lowest point level that you have. If somebody has a box set and it's only 750 points or 500 points, we'll play down to that level. If you have a starter box, we want to get people introduced into the hobby, but sometimes the hobby itself can be intimidating. And sometimes even worse than that, gamers can be intimidating. I always oftentimes say that when Age of Sigmar first came out and it had this, you know, no points. I put a model on the table. You put a model on the table. You know, that was a real good way to find out if the guy across the table was an asshole. Well, a lot of times in this hobby, you know, especially with points, maybe it takes to the second or third round to find out if that guy's not so good. And I think that, you know, as a community, we have to remember that it is a social contract. And what you're trying to do is, you know, build that future. It's like, you know, Herner, the first time I met you, you and I met yesterday and we know each other today, but what really matters, and Dustin, I'll say this to you, and Steve, I'll say this to you and everybody listening, what really matters is how we know each other tomorrow. That's what really matters. And I think the events that you put on, Herner, the enthusiasm you bring to every game, Dustin, is that glue. And that's my standpoint. How can you make the community better? How can groups do that? You know, be approachable. And remember the social contract in gaming. That's what I got.
That's great stuff.
That's what I got. And you know what? That's a heck of a way to close the show. So another great show.
Grimdark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar and 40K worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday. So until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking goose sniffing game of goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at grimdarklive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms. Bye.